Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
See, you hear that hand clap? It's my favorite time of the week. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. With me, of course, and Captain White Claw. Okay. Russ Cortinel is back each and every week. How are you, Rusty?
I am good, thanks.
We're going to start, before we talk about what's on the show, we're going to start recording our pre-show little discussions that we always have. Okay,
The banter.
We got Stevie in Ottawa who hooks us up. And so a little back and forth for a few minutes. And we talk about things that we're afraid to talk about on the show.
Yeah.
And yours always is, hurry up, I want to open a White Claw.
Yeah. Fuck, I got two sitting right here. I had to wait 15
all right.
Minutes.
Well, we'll get to that. Big week for you, actually, in L.A. There's a number of things we want to talk about. The PGA is going to your golf course, Sherwood, for the Zozo Championship. It's kind of an invite thing. I don't think there's a cut. Tiger won it last year. He used to host this tournament, and I think he still does, doesn't he?
He's playing in it. He won it last year.
Yeah. We'll talk about that for a few minutes. The titles are in now for the NBA. The Lakers, of course, won. Tampa Bay won the NHL, of course. The World Series is set up. Speaking of Tampa, it could be a hell of a year for them. Tampa's going to the World Series against the Dodgers, the LA Dodgers. So that starts this week. So I want to talk about those are shortened seasons. Is this taking anything away from the guys who've won championships in the past? TV ratings are awful, Russ.
Ooh.
For sports, they're way down. They're way down. And I know what I've been doing, because for sure I watch far less sports. And I wonder if it's going to change after COVID is over, whether people will watch less sports because of this. The other thing, Russ, is rights fees are escalating for sports properties. And with the viewership way down, and yet broadcast partners for sports teams is an exorbitant amount of money to pay it, and that keeps going up. Will we go to a pay-per-view thing down the road in the future? Because right now you get to watch sports for nothing. We're 10 days into the free agency deal. I want to ask you, Russ, about that. Is it exciting? Is it stressful? And if we got time, 25 years ago, your buddy Serge Savard got fired from the Montreal Canadiens, which led to... I want to say Mario Tremblay came in to coach, and Rajon Houle, who was a former player, and I worked with him at Molson. Like a lot of the Montreal Canadian guys, Molson looked after them and gave them gigs, but not a great experience. Rajon did not
have. Great guy, though.
Great guy. Wonderful guy. And, of course, on the heels of that came the Patrick Waugh fiasco of him skating out of his neck because they wouldn't pull him. He let in a bunch of goals. And it's kind of one of those things. I remember where I was when it happened. And he skated over to the bench, told Tremblay, it's the last time I'll ever play here. I think the senator, his seats were right behind the bench.
It was Ronald Corey, the president of the team, that he said, I'll never play for years.
There you go. There you go. And then he ended up going to the Avalanche and won the Stanley Cup. So
I think he said to Ronald Corey, now I'm making this up, but I think he said to Ronald Corey, I'm not playing for the Montreal Canadiens ever again. And then when he went by Tremblay, he went, go fuck yourself.
That kind of sums it up, Rusty. Hey? The old go fuck yourself.
I wasn't there, but
you know, it's the old go to when a guy's trying to think, how should I tell the guy I want to leave the team? Should I get my lawyer to phone? Should I get the agent? No, just give him a go fuck yourself. Saves a lot of time. Anyway, we're gonna launch into some of that. Before we do though, Joe Thornton, Jumbo Joe, 41 years old. This thing has gone viral. He decides to go play for Toronto to sign a deal for $700,000, which normally Russ would just be like a one-off at the end of a sports show. You know, be like, here we are. Here's all the news about the Lakers and the World Series. And by the way, as we sign off, Joe Thornton signed a deal in Toronto. But holy man, Russ, there's just so much stuff on this. You go through social media. It finally died down a bit today about almost like it's the Gretzky trade or something. You played in Toronto. It's got to have something to do with them starving for NHL news or news. And anyway, like they're almost alluding to the fact he might be this. He might get them to a Stanley Cup.
Well, he's quoted as saying, I want to win a Stanley Cup, or I have to win a Stanley Cup, and the Toronto Maple Leafs are close, and I think they can win. So that gives fans hope when a player of his stature is calling for their team to win. And he's a big name. His best days are behind him, but he brings a lot to the team maturity wise. And they've got some young players that he can help out. And you know what, the stress will be off him to play the way he used to play. Mm-hmm. And maybe he'll even play better because he won't have the pressure to live up to his old numbers, which he hasn't lived up to in the last couple of years.
We hear about it all the time. You know, his best days are behind him, like you said, but he's a great grab for the team because of his experience. Walk us through that, Russ. What's Joe Thornton going to do with Austin Matthews and the other guys in that team or the younger guys?
Well, Colorado did it when they got Ray Bourque. And right. I remember Ray was at the end of his career and he went there and he played really well. And then he won a cup. Edmonton used to do it in the 80s all the time. They would trade for an older player. And Slats was the king at grabbing somebody at the deadline and bringing them in at just for the playoff run, for their experience. And so I just think that young players who grew up watching and are now playing in the NHL, when they get to play with a player that they idolized as a kid, it just means so much. I loved Borya Salmon growing up, and then I got to play with Borya, became friends with Borya, and I just, myself and Dan Hodgson and Jeff Jackson and Todd Gill and Ali Afridi and Ken Reagan and Steve Thomas were all really young. Wendell Clark, Gary Lehman, really young. Gary Nyland, we're all young. We were all under the age of 22. Mm-hmm. We got to play with Borya and we freaking loved him. And we looked up to him. And so I think that'll happen with Joe. And the young players that they have, that and the excellent players that Toronto has. I don't know if Joe's going to be the answer, but he's definitely going to help the team.
Right. Only the funny people, Russ, on Twitter. Okay. This is funny. So Joe Thornton, the deal blows up. It's great. Joe Thornton's coming to Toronto, and we know Toronto is a. You played there, Russ, and you better be prepared for being under the microscope, correct, if you played mm-hmm. there? Anyway, some guy puts out a funny tweet pretending he's Joe Thornton. Got it in quotes. You know, you see these things pop up.
Yeah.
If it's Joe Thornton saying, I'm way too fucking old to go deeper than the first round in the playoffs, so I thought I would go to Toronto.
Oh, bastard. That guy must be a Habs fan.
Yeah, I got to be a Habs fan, yeah. Anyway, good luck to Joe.
Good luck to Joe. And I know why you haven't been watching many sports on TV.
Why?
Because your police officer girlfriend, every time she comes over, she puts her handcuffs on you.
Shut up. It's her birthday. Hey, it's her birthday this week.
And you know why she puts the handcuffs on you?
Well, okay, Russ?
Not for
why?
Your dirty mind. So you can't smoke.
That would never stop me. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you'd probably be able to work the lighter and the package and the smoke with your toes.
Yeah, I'd be like Houdini. Go ahead, handcuff me. Watch. I'll still be able to get a jet. I'll be able to do it. Tell me about the big golf tournament happening. You're gonna host a party. So the PGA,
oh my God,
as we mentioned at the top, is on their way to Sherwood. as we speak, you said all the caddies are out there marking off yardages and pin placements and checking the roll of the putts.
Yeah. So I'm watching them. I'm watching them walk by. I've been poking my head out in and out all day. And so what they do is they have those booklets, right, with the yardages, the yard book, and then the greens and and the caddy's writing in it, and so are the pros. And then they've got little dots on the green. I think they have four dots, different colors, and they know what day that pin is going to be there. And then they're rolling the balls. Like the caddy is, and the pro, I've seen them out there. They're actually rolling the balls on the green with their hands. A couple guys were playing, hitting chip shots and stuff. And they're out there just making notes. And then the workers are busy, you know, just making the place look great. And they're putting up TV cameras. And for anybody who's going to watch this weekend, who listens to our show, I am two doors from the fourth green. So they flip-flop the nines for the pro tournaments. So normally I'm on number 13.
Right.
But this Thursday through Sunday, I'm on the fourth green. And I'll be the house that if there's a problem.
I might fly down there for this.
But if there's a problem. A noise problem. that'll be my house.
Tell us then who's on that invite list. Give us some names of people.
The Gretzky's are invited. I invited Billy Bush from the E Channel.
We know Billy Bush. Yeah, we know his story.
I've invited Scotty Upshaw, Shane O'Brien, and some local friends. My son's got some hockey players from college coming in.
Yeah.
And neighbors, you know. Val Bure, of course, Val and Lev, his son, are invited.
Sure.
They came last year when we had the tournament. We had the party for the Champions Tour.
Yes.
And Val, so we have a gate and go down to the fairway. And at that tournament, there was no COVID, so you could go out on the golf course. And I had a bunch of passes, so people went down and walked around the golf course. And Val goes down to the fourth green, and he texts me, and he goes, "Holy shit, Russ, you can hear everything from your house. He goes, it's so freaking loud down here." And I go, so it'll be interesting if I can keep it to a dull roar.
Don't bother, man. Let it fly.
I'm having people over Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. Saturday, I'm going to Jamie Ashton's house, who lives on the golf course and throws great parties.
Right.
And those are to name a few. And I got a lot of friends from Gaza I invited that live in LA, and just people who are into golf, or not. I just said stop by. I'm going to be doing a barbecue on Thursday, tacos on Friday. And then another barbecue on Sunday.
There you go. So if I get my shit together, I'm away for a few nights, but I'm going to be back Sunday. If we get our act together, you can line up some guests if we can work it out for Sunday.
It'll be noisy.
It'll be noisy and drunk. It'll be good.
Yeah.
Russ, I got to ask you about your daughter, Allie, because I follow her. She's a wonderful girl. She's a beautiful girl. And of course she's, they're not engaged yet, I guess, or did they get engaged? Her and Eric.
They're not engaged yet.
Okay. Eric Kendricks is her boyfriend and plays for the Vikes. How are they doing?
Not good.
Anyway, I saw a post, Russ, with her, and it looked like she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And someone had asked me about it, and I said, I don't know. I'll ask Russ. I don't know if it's the cover or if it was sort of an article on featuring models and athletes like your daughter. Tell me the story there.
So if you're on Instagram, it's at @SI_swimsearch. And so what she does every year is she puts her name in and pictures and videos to try to get on she wants to be one of the swimsuit models for Sports Illustrated. So they do a search. SI search.
Right.
And they posted a mock-up picture. It was a mock-up front page of Sports Illustrated. But if you looked at it closely, it says SI swim search. So it made it look like she was on the cover, but it,
right.
It's a search, you know, and then if you scroll to the left, there was more girls. I think they posted like 10 girls, different pictures, but anyways, they've been loving Allie, and hopefully she gets it this year. It's her third year trying to get in the magazine for the swimsuit edition.
Yep. Yep.
So we'll see.
Wow. But
they thought enough of her to post that.
God, the most accomplished children in the world. Anyway, yeah, cool. Look, check her out. I don't know what her handle is, but you can
just Allie Courtneau.
Allie Courtneau, and she's on. Yeah. I think mostly Instagram is her deal. Anyway, good luck to her. Good luck to her. You must be proud from what she's trying to do, and she's got lots to say. She's very outspoken about body shaming and stuff like that. It's she's pretty cool. She's pretty cool.
I've read a bunch of the stuff. Mental health, fitness. Modeling, you know, her modeling, and right. She's really into cooking and healthy cooking. And then what she tries to do, especially for girls and women, is show them a healthy way to eat. And then also to show them that it's okay to go have a double double and
right.
a cheese pizza. And she posts all this good stuff. So she's like, this is my life, but this is also my life. And so she's trying to get away from this unhealthy way that girls and women have been living their lives, and she's trying right. to do it herself and try to share her story. So it's cool.
Yeah, I've got a daughter, my oldest child, Sydney. Our daughter's 20. She was born in 96, so she's 24. And boy, sometimes I worry because of the stress and the unbelievable peer pressure on girls to stay skinny.
Yeah.
You know, and my daughter's super healthy and all that, but I sometimes get worried, you know, when I hear all the time, yeah, I'm on a diet, or I got to get to the gym and all this stuff. And she's nowhere near having any trouble with weight, you know? And so I'm right in that zone of going, oh my God, don't worry about it, you know, because
yeah,
it's caused so many problems yeah. with young girls with yeah. this pressure to do it. So good for her. She's a great, yeah. great role model for other people.
Men don't want women who are bone racks.
Yes.
Unnatural. And you know what I mean? Those really,
yeah.
just be natural. Your body is your body. And you know what? You got to love your body, and whatever we were given, that's the body we have. So.
And obviously, my new girl and your wife, Paris, are certainly not into their husbands and boyfriends being bone racks. Good for them.
Yeah, yeah.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
Rusty, so the Lakers win. I don't know if we talked about that or not. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Tampa Bay was Stanley Cup champs. We might be into a hell of a year here with Tampa Bay. The city of Tampa.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They got, if these guys win the World Series, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers wipe out, Green yeah. Bay this past week.
It's a great
and game. Everyone's going to be watching for them to do big things.
Yeah.
You know, i.e. Super Bowl, God, they could have three championships there.
Yeah. And late, no how time. About, hey, don't count out our Dodgers. We could have two with the Lakers.
Yeah, yeah, but they're the Dodgers. Come on, who cares?
I know.
Tampa Bay, man, is.
I know you do.
Not predictable.
Hey, on Wednesday night, talking about the Lakers. So last Wednesday, we took Lawton to Nobu in Malibu for his graduation dinner party because we haven't been together. So we all were together, the whole family, minus Eric. He was in Minnesota, obviously.
Right.
We went to Malibu, special place right on the ocean. It was great. The guy gave us a beautiful table outside. And as we were finishing up dinner, it was quite late because we didn't get in until 8 o'clock, 8:15.
Right.
So we were probably 10:15, probably when we were leaving, which in Malibu is late. And the Lakers start rolling in for their
shut party. Up.
Yeah, it was so cool. So the first one to arrive was LeBron.
Yeah.
And so he rolled in, and then they just one by one they came with, you know, friends and girlfriends and wives. And the one guy came, he had a camera. So they brought their own cameraman to photo everything. And
right.
And anyways, they were all very, you know, the ones that passed us as we were waiting to get our cars, our car yeah. to leave, were super nice, friendly, big, giant men.
It's scary how big they are, right?
When well, in the 6'4", you know, when the 6'4" guy shows up and he's beside the 7-foot guy, he looks really small. And then you walk over and you go, oh, shit, he's tall too.
Did you meet LeBron?
Nope.
Did he show up?
No, he was the first guy to walk by us.
Oh, he was. Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was the first guy to walk by. He was the first guy to arrive and walk by. And so they had their own room at the end. And it was fun because they started playing some cool music and you could feel like it was just starting to happen. And the place was going to take off. So I wonder how late they stayed, but
yeah.
Anyways, they were all there. They were all there for their team victory party.
Pro athletes, not only they're great at their sport, but they are world-class partiers when they're allowed to be.
Yeah.
So I've been around this, the hockey guys like you have. In any event, Russ, these championships that they're winning, you know, they're shortened schedules. I think the NBA was only 95 days or something like that. And we know the hockey was, baseball was like 60 games as opposed to the 180,000 that they play normally. are these championships, Russ, do they get the asterisks on them? Are they taken away from guys like you who played your whole year with, you know, long, long seasons, you know, thick four rounds of playoffs? And of course this year that wasn't the case. And what are your thoughts on that, Russ, about winning during these times? And is it taken away from guys who really have won under the regular circumstances?
I don't think it's taken away from anyone. And here's what I think around all the players I hung out with this summer, not one player, present or past said, oh, but not right. One. Never heard one guy, not Gretz, not Kelly Chase, not Doug Waite, not Ray Whitney, not Brendan Morrow, not Bobby Ryan, not Tyler Johnson, not John Cooper, Sheldon Sray. I can go on and on and on of all the guys who were around this summer. And I did not hear one conversation where somebody said, oh, but. So it might
be. What do you think?
I agree with all of them. I mean, okay. I think that it is what it is. I mean, this whole year for everyone around the world has been different unless you live somewhere on an island where you don't get tourists and so there's no COVID.
Right.
But I just think this whole year has been so crazy. It's been crazy for everyone, no matter what you do.
Right.
And so I just think it's just that year and people – are so happy to see their teams play. The players are so happy to be able to play and compete and have an opportunity to win. Mm-hmm. I saw Andrew Whitworth, number 77, best left tackle, I think, in the offensive tackle in the league right now. Plays for the Rams. Paris is redoing their house. Great, great guy. He was outside my fence the other day, driving around looking at the golf course with his wife. He was showing her, you know, how the term's going to look. And he never even brought it up. He just said, you know what, we're giving her. And he goes, the weird thing is the fans, not having the fans. That's the only thing I've heard from the players is the how weird it is playing in these empty buildings where on TV, it looks great and sounds great.
Yeah.
As a fan, you cannot tell me that it looks and it feels any different other than.
I agree. Yeah. I know other people have said that to me and I said, look at, I'm a fanatic sports watcher. Okay. And I've been watching the playoffs. Have been fantastic in baseball. I watched a little bit of basketball. I watched tons of hockey, and I'm watching all kinds of golf. You know, they're pulling it off in golf. They pulled it off in basketball. They had no cases of it. You know, the backstory in that, they played in the bubble in Orlando, the NBA, and, the league, it cost the league, they were going to lose $2.5 billion, Russ.
No okay? way.
And they saved $1.5 billion by pulling it off. I'm not making those numbers up. I read this today. But I've watched all those sports. I watch, Russ. I agree. For a second, I look at golf and go, well, I guess there's no fan. And I immediately forget about it. Like 60 seconds later, I'm watching golf like I normally do. And it's all fine. You know, it's all fine.
The first time I watched golf, it was weird. But you know what I think? And you can tell me because you're a media guy. I'm not. Do you think they've
easy?
Well, what I think they've done is the camera work. They focus the camera shots. You don't get these big shots of the empty stadium like yes. you used to. And I think in golf, when they first had the cameras going, it looked like, you know, you were in the middle of Central Park and you're all by yourself. Like right. they were way too, what do you call that? When you had like a wide angle shot of the golf course.
Yeah, way too wide. Yeah, wide shot.
Yeah, and it looked weird. Like you could see three holes over. I don't know, maybe it was the golf course. But anyways, I think the TV guys, the producers of all the sports, all should be winning awards because they've made us fans feel like there's been no change. And it's really made people feel really, really good and have something to look forward to.
I agree.
And I've watched more sports. It's funny. I played professional hockey, but I wasn't a sports guy growing up. Like I couldn't sit and watch a lot of sports.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. And I've got into football because of Eric, and I watch a little bit of girls soccer because of the girls. I watch Lawton's hockey, and now I've been watching hockey over the years, but not a ton. But now, like with COVID, I watched a lot of hockey games, more than I've ever watched since I retired.
When I think about it, honestly, saying I'm a hockey fan, I don't know that in all the games I've watched on TV, I don't know that I've ever watched any game at any time from front to back. Like, I might for a period, but then I walk away for a little while and
well, that's because you were doing blow in the bathroom. And
I had places to go. Jeez.
Christ, when's the next commercial?
Yeah. Anyway, I agree with you. And if you want to, you know, to your point about the fans thing, all you have to do is look at the CFL, which suffers greatly by attendance. And when you watch some of those games, the football's great. There's always this debate about whether they should go to four downs or whether they should adapt NFL rules, and diehards are like dead against it. But one of the things that really harms the CFL is the perception when you do look at a game that's being televised, the stands are empty a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And it makes it look terrible. Rusty, let's talk about, speaking of the great job that the networks are doing television wise, the fact of the matter is the ratings are plummeting. Okay. The ratings are awful. With people watching sports, they're way down. And I'm saying, okay, well, why? And if I look at myself, because I've been doing other things, I would think they would go up, Russ. I thought with COVID that the ratings would go way up, but they're not. I ended up painting my whole house, spending more time doing that. Do you think, Russ, like after COVID's over, and by the way, COVID I'm finding right now is depressing. I'm starting to get depressed, Russ, that I can't move around the city like I used to, and so I find it a bit of a struggle, to be honest with you, with it, the isolation and all that shit.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen after, Russ? Here's the fact of the matter is ratings are down. Do you think people are going to watch sports in a different way than they did pre-COVID or during COVID?
Man, it's a good question. I mean, they're talking today about gyms, just people not going back to gyms to work out.
I'm for that.
Yeah. You wouldn't know where one is. Yeah, I would.
There's no ashtrays. I can't go.
Yeah. I worry about sports, but I think it'd be short term. I think over time people forget, you know, people have short memories, and mm-hmm. I mean, Spanish flu, 1918. I mean, we're just, I'm just hearing about it for the first time. I don't, you know, I never, if I learned it in school, I was asleep when they were teaching it.
Right, right.
And millions of people died. So, you know, obviously if we were afraid of being around people, that would have happened 102 years ago and we'd be freaked out. So I think sports is going to get back once we have some medicines that make people feel confident to be around. Right. And they're going to, you know, it's going to take some time because one, I think economically people have been really hurt. Mm-hmm. So financially it's going to take a while to get back to affording those things that people love to do, which is travel, holiday vacations, sports, you know, these extra activities that aren't essential to their lives of living.
Right.
But I mean, freaking Roman days are freaking, you know, they went to the Colosseum and here we are today still doing it.
Right. I read a good post where grandkids today are trying to explain to their grandparents how they can even keep a straight face or think this is legit at all about how tough life is for a young kid today. Mm-hmm. And then a grandmother goes, well, you brought up one of them. Let's just start, you know, if you're born in 1900.
Yeah, it's okay, crazy.
Two wars, yeah. You know, Spanish flu, like you said, Holocaust, awful, awful, awful things that happened in the first 50 years, you know, of the 1900s. And so you might want to pipe down kids about how tough things are and with the stuff that they have. But
I worry more about that than I do just the young people today and lack of knowledge of what people have lived through and the sacrifices we've made.
Right.
I think that we're in a funky time right now where we've got a lot of people that don't want to work. And, you know, this getting checks to stay home and to avoid COVID, there's a lot of people that are loving it. And so that worries me. And just lack of knowledge of what our parents, our grandparents, our great grandparents and before went through to have the liberties that we have and the freedoms we have. And we all want it to be easier for our kids. I want my kids' life to be easy. Not that mine was super difficult or anything. I mean, I lost my father when I was young, but I played in the NHL. I mean, the good outweighs any bad things that happen other than losing my father. It was the worst thing that happened to me in my life. Mm-hmm. But I just think that worries me more than anything about kids want, you know, motivation.
Yeah, the self-entitlement, right, of kids. Like, you know, further to that guy's thing I read the other day about, well, here's what's happened since the, you know, 1900 is, you know, at the same time, don't forget, there's no Wi-Fi, no cell phones, no internet, you know, with the luxury that we have today. But, speaking of sports, Rusty, do you think, I just threw around a couple of big billion-dollar figures there with the NBA. We brought up in previous shows about the cost to build that stadium in LA was in the billions. The fee for a Major League Baseball team is, I think, a billion, something like that. Do you think, Russ, we're ever going to get to a day where you can't watch sports for free anymore and that someone's going to come up with an idea going, you want to watch it? It's going to cost you $20 at home.
But that doesn't make sense to me because DirecTV, we have to pay extra to have the football package. We want the NHL. We have to pay for it. I don't get what you're saying.
Well, if you watch NBC, okay, my normal cable.
Okay, yeah, but that's one game. That's not, okay.
Well, TSN, Russ, so my cable bill is, I don't know, $60 a month. I don't know what I pay, okay? It's the same every month, okay? And I got five channels on TSN. I got five sports nets. I got CBC, CTV, well, NBC, all the American networks, and it doesn't change my cost.
You're paying $60. So you know what? They might make
for
it 80
unlimited free events.
Yeah, okay, but you're paying. You're already paying. It's not free.
But it's still the same, Russ, and all the rights fees are going way up for these teams and stuff like that.
Right. So guess what? Your $60 TSN will be $80 or it'll be $100. You're already paying.
Don't yell at me. I'm just asking you, man. Okay.
It's not free. You're paying something for it, and they're getting the money.
Well,
anything else, Sarah Kreskin?
Well, listen, you watch MMA fights, okay, or whatever they are. You got to pay.
No, I don't.
Yeah, but no, you got to. I hate them anyway.
No, I don't.
Don't say
anything. I don't pay, so I don't watch.
You know what I mean, okay?
But those are one-off. They happen every once in a while. They're promotion. You know, that's been going on. Pay-per-view for fights has been going on a long time. And people who are fans pay. The reason it's not because I don't want to pay the money. It's because I don't like it.
Right.
So I don't watch it. I love the fact that we pay for things that we want. We don't have to pay for the things we don't.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, think there is going to be a day where it's going to cost you more than your regular
flat. You're right. Everything goes up. How much your pack of cigarettes cost 20 years ago?
$20 for a pack of smokes now, Russ.
How much did it cost 20 years ago?
Cost a fin.
Five? So there you go. So in 20 years, your TSM bill will be $240. Simple answer.
There you go. Okay. I'm glad I brought it up. Couple of one-offs, but before I do that, I got to ask you about free agency. We're a couple weeks in now with it happening, and it's had the usual hoopla that went around with it, with big signings, small signings, sort of exciting, sort of not for me every year. But you went through it, Russ. You were around when free agency happened. You were around guys who were talk of the town, front and center when free agency was going to happen. This is from my buddy Steve, by the way. Thanks, Steve, for this idea. Was it exciting or stressful, Russ, if you are going into free agency as a player?
It was. So I had the experience of it. I had experienced it once, and it sucked.
Right.
So I was hoping, you know, 1997, went to the Rangers, thought I was going to sign. Nothing happened. I turned down some offers. So it was exciting for like half a day, and then I was like, oh, fuck, this sucks. But I went through it with my brother, Jeff, and he hit the lottery three times, I think.
Did he?
Two for sure. Two times. He did both with St. Louis, and he just crushed it. And there was a bunch of teams like after him. Like he had eight teams, and so watching him go through it, it was exciting to see that. You know, just the, like everybody's calling like, oh, what do you, will you go to this team? Will you go to that team? It didn't happen for me. So.
And the dollar signs just keep getting bigger and bigger.
Well, that, and then you start to decide, oh God, where do I want to live?
Right.
And he had two young kids, right? So then you start going, honey, do you want to live in Philadelphia? Do you want to live in New York? Do you want to live in Boston? Do you want to live in Vancouver? Do you want to live in Edmonton? Do you want to live in LA? I mean, St. Louis, what do you want to do? Like, and we got to make a decision right now.
Right.
Like, so they're waiting because here, when those teams have that money and they're like jonesing after a guy and they lose out, they still have that money and there's other players. So they're going, I need a decision right now. Cause then they go into the next guy. And it just like snowballs.
Right.
And then, you know, there's fewer teams because they've signed a guy. Okay, they're out. Now you got, instead of five teams, you got four. And then you're three, then you're two, then, you know.
Bottom's falling out. Yeah.
Well, and then it depends on the price of the player too. Like Taylor Hall was what, $8 million for 1 year. So, you know, there's a lot of teams that would say, oh, we'd like to sign Taylor Hall, but we just don't have the money. So then you're working with the teams that can afford a guy like that. So the guy who's the, let's call the $2, $3 million player, there's a lot more teams that have that money to pay him. So he might get 12 offers where Taylor Hall might have got two.
Right.
Because there's no one who can write that check because they don't have.
So it can go either way. It can be a terrible day for a guy or the greatest day of a guy's life.
Exactly.
Where are they now? Think, where's Rob Blake now, Russ? What's he doing?
He is the GM of LA Kings.
Oh, your kid. What's Luke doing? What's Luke Robitaille doing?
He's the president.
Oh, okay. I didn't know Rob was there.
Yeah. Yeah, they came in at the same time. Well, Luke was head of business and marketing.
Luke Robitaille, by the way.
Yep. Yeah, and then Rob was the assistant GM, and then they got rid of Lombardi, was it? And then they hired Luke to be the new president and Blakey to be the GM.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's good for – I just
assumed – Great guys, by the way. Freaking awesome. Yeah,
I love Luke Robitaille. He's hilarious,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Hilarious
Never had guy. A bad day in his life.
We got to do a few shout-outs here, Russ. Let me check my and you can respond. We had Neil Fernie, is a big listener to the show, big sports guy. And he said, I wanted to ask Russ something. He saw a post by Steve Simmons on something about media people that he either loved or hated. And he wanted to know what that was like for you in Toronto or Montreal. Both those teams where the media coverage is through the roof. Did you have any bad experiences with media guys?
Well, you haven't played in Toronto or Montreal if you haven't had a bad experience. And that just comes with the territory. Austin Matthews had a problem with the media this year. And I think his name was Steve Simmons. A reporter announced that he had COVID, and it was against privacy and all this stuff. And Austin called him out, and he was pissed off.
Right.
And so that's the life of being a Toronto Maple Leaf and a Montreal Canadian. It doesn't matter what type of player you are, whether you're the best player or the worst player on the team, there's going to be some issues. It just comes with the territory.
Right.
And it is fantastic to play in those two cities. If you're ever lucky enough to have the opportunity to play there, you're never going to forget it.
Right.
But there is going to come, there'll come a time where they're going to rip you apart. And it just, it happens to everybody. Guy Lafleur in Montreal, somebody that probably had a problem with Guy and wrote something that he didn't like. So yes, the media is there to cover the team, and they want to cover every aspect, good and bad, and they're going to run with it. So
if you think that's bad, okay, it is tough to play in Montreal and Toronto because you're under the microscope. You can't, they're following you around and stuff. I saw a piece yesterday about an actress in Hollywood, and it was the story she was telling was almost sounded unbelievable to me, but she was saying that there are often 20 people outside of her door, she lives in Beverly Hills, and following her to school to drop her kid off. And
that's
and,
called paparazzi. That's not the media.
Yeah. And it's just unbelievable, So, anyway, let's read a little, let's go to our email. We'd love you to email us. thisisbenables@yahoo.com. We've got one from Robert Stroh. Great podcast. I really appreciate you and Russ putting in the time to put these together. I'm working from home now, so listening to podcasts is my daily ritual. The Suspendables is a regular part of the routine. I get you a shout out. Question for Russ. I'd like to hear his best crazy hockey parent story. I'm a hockey ringette dad and feel like I've seen it all over the years. I'd love to hear other parents' stories of the craziness that they see at the rink. What do you say, Russ?
Well, I coached the Bad News Bears in LA hockey team, and my son was on the team, and we're in the playoffs. First round, you lose and you're out. So We're playing the LA Kings, or we're playing another LA team, and I know it's going to be 20-2 or 20-0. They're that much better than we are. So I started our number one goalie, and I was going to let him let in about five or six, pull him, and then put the other goalie in, and just keep rotating them. I didn't say this to anybody because I didn't want the kids thinking that we were going to lose. I've got them ready to win and getting, we can do this if we do this and that. And knowing in the back of my mind, we're just going to get shit kicked. So I had a rule when I coached, the parents couldn't talk to me about their kids, but the kids could come talk to me about their ice time position, anything about hockey. Parents can talk to me, but you can't talk to me about their kid and the game. So there's this parent, and he was a lawyer, and his dad was his son was our number one goalie, great kid. And I liked the dad. He was a little crazy, but I liked him. And so we're playing this team. It's 6-1 or 7-1, and it's in the first period. And so I pull him. And uh-oh. And it during a timeout, I pull him. And the dad runs from the corner around, jumps up on the glass, starts screaming at me. It's not his, like, F this and F that. It's not, I couldn't even understand half the shit he was saying.
He's frothing at the mouth.
So I can't remember the kid's name. I go, all right. I turn to the dad. I go, you want to see your kid in net? You're going to see him. I turn to the kid. I go, get back in the net. He starts crying. He doesn't want to go back. I go, get back in the net. So 10-1, 12-1, 14-1, 16-1. Every time he'd come to the, in between periods, he'd come crying, still crying. I don't want to play. I go, nope, your dad wants to see you play. Get back in the net.
That's cruel.
Get back in the net. Get back in the net. And I kept him in 22-2, I think we lost. Oh, no. And after the game, I walked up to the old man and I said, and now he understands, I think, what I was trying to do. I think.
Right.
Because now he's crying. And I go, you wanted to see your fucking son embarrassed? I didn't, but you got to see it. So that's on you, not on me. I said, my plan was to take him out after 6, keep him on the bench, and then put him back. And that's what I was going to do. But you wanted to see your son in the net. You got to see him. Good for you. Have a freaking nice ride home. And I walked right out of the building. I never saw that guy again. It was all about his freaking kid. And when I coached, I cared about every single kid on the team, not just mine. I coached the entire team. And I wanted them all to have success. I wanted them to learn life lessons, not only just being a hockey player. And I had this other kid. I've talked about this, and it had nothing to do with the parents. I freaking loved the parents. But this kid smashed his stick every time he came to the bench. And the sticks are a couple $100. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if you smash that freaking stick one more time that your parents worked their asses off to buy you, you're going to play the rest of this freaking game without that stick.
Right.
You do it one more time and that's it. Smashes, comes back after a bad shift, smashes it on the boards. I take the stick away. I go, get out there. The referee's like looking at him, go, where's your stick? He goes, coach won't let me play with it. He goes, coach, the ref comes over and goes, you give him a sticker, it's a penalty. Go, tell me in the rule book where it says he has to have a stick in his hand. There's no rule. I was guessing because I've never read the rule book.
Well, you can play without a stick. You see it all the time. Guys break
exactly,
it, they drop it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm going with. So the ref goes, if you don't put a stick in his hand, I'm going to give you a bench minor. I go, okay. I go, Mitch, come over here. I knew this kid's name, Mitch Meek. Mitch, get over here. I put this kid out there and I said, soon as the puck drops, you sprint to the bench. Mitch, you're playing. You're not playing with a stick. He played the whole shift without a stick. He never, ever slammed a stick against the boards ever.
I hate you as a coach. I don't think I'd like you as a coach. You know, the lessons are too hurtful. A couple of shout outs. Mike Hines, thanks a lot for listening. Darren Hammonds, I know Darren from way back. He's down in Palm Springs now. He's a listener to the show. Daryl Folds is a listener. You and I have a connection here slightly, Russ. My longest and dearest friend that I grew up with in Sudbury, our parents, our fathers were best friends. They went to law school together. They were both varsity hockey players, Dick Trainer and of course my dad. And Dick was the guy who convinced my dad to come up to Sudbury, where of course is my hometown. And one of the school teachers there that my buddy Martin had was a guy named Barry McKenzie.
Oh, Barry.
See?
And, oh, my God.
He was a math teacher. There may be another connection here. He was a math teacher. I think he probably taught Martin with John Savage, who is the father of Brian Savage.
And I met John.
You met Brian's dad?
Yeah, they have cottages right beside each other.
On, that's right.
Lake Manitou.
That's right. Manitoulin Island.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you play with Savvy in Montreal?
No, he came after me.
Came after. Anyway, Barry McKenzie, of course, was your coach at Notre Dame when you were on the Hound line there.
Yeah, Wendell Clark, Gary Lehman, James Patrick. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Rod Brind'Amour, Coach Gord Kluzak. I mean, Lyndon Byers. I mean, Barry McKenzie and Terry O'Malley, who were the two main hockey coaches at Notre Dame. I never played for Terry, but I played for Barry, and what a great coach. Barry reminded me a lot of my dad. And so I absolutely fell in love with Barry when I was, he coached me when I was 16, my second year midget. And the first person I called after my mom when I got drafted was Barry McKenzie at Notre Dame.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, Barry and I still stay in touch. I haven't heard from Barry in a while, but he's living in Sudbury. He retired there from Notre Dame.
Right.
And he's been, you know, Barry. He's a great guy and love Barry McKenzie. Love his family.
Yeah. Great story. So anyway, Martin Trainer, my longest and dearest friend, he's a wonderful story in himself. We like I say, grew up together, and Martin's dad, Dick Trainer, was a best friend of Tim Hortons.
From
Toronto. Yep. And Martin's dad did all the legal work. I think I may be missing a point or two, but I know he did the legal work for Tim Horton when he started the donut shops. And Martin ended up going down to Truro, Nova Scotia, and has been in the Tim Horton business for, God, 25, 30 years probably.
Good for him, making nothing but money.
He's got three or four stores there that I talked to him the other day, and Martin went on, he captained. We played hockey together. His old man was our coach, Adam and Pee-wee. And then my old man stepped in and said, all my brothers and sisters were ski racers. And my dad said, I'm not driving to two different things. You're going to ski race. And Martin went on to be a great player and played for the Laurentian Voyageurs. And anyway, thanks, Martin, for that story. And he let me know about Barry McKenzie and cool connection. Sounds like he was a great guy.
If his dad is still alive, he should ask him if this is true, because Harold Ballard lent Tim Horton the money to start the business. He lent him $150,000.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I think he might have ended up owing Harold, Harold may have lent him more, up to $450,000 or something like that. But I know Harold told me the story that Tim Horton sat in his office and said, the future is fast. In the morning, you need something quick. You need a cup of coffee and a donut to go.
Right.
And he told Harold this story and he goes, but I need to borrow $150,000. And then when Tim Horton died, his wife and mother got into a fight over the estate. And I think they sold his share for $1 million, and they both got, you know, $500,000 minus what they owed Harold.
So yeah, it wasn't a good story.
No. No, Harold lent him the money. Without Harold Ballard, there might be no Tim Hortons.
Yeah. And what a great story Tim Hortons is. Anyway, thanks, Martin, for that story. My good buddy and everybody else up in Sudbury and
everybody who's listening, and he's making $250,000 to $400,000 net per store. So when you see him at the bar, make sure he buys you a round.
Make sure he buys your coffee. Yeah, buy me a coffee.
You're going to switch to Starbucks.
Yeah. anyway, thanks everyone for listening again. Another great show, Rusty. We're going to watch for you this weekend, folks. This is Thursday when you're hearing this, or excuse me, Wednesday. So Russ's house is on the fourth hole of Sherwood, where the PGA stop is this week. Yeah. And the cameras are going to end up in your backyard for sure. So
I'll send out some Instagram pics.
Let's do it. Yeah, do that for sure. Okay, Rusty, have a good week. Enjoy yourself this weekend. We're going to be anxious to hear how all the parties went. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and him, Russ Courtnell. Take care, everybody. See you, Rusty.
See you, pal.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Courtnell in LA. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.